Welcome back into another edition of the Daft on Draft podcast. I am your host, Corey Kinnon. Today, we will be discussing the college football playoff bracket. It's out. There's some surprises, and I'm excited to talk through it. As always, I have Dalton Miller here with me to talk through that. Dalton, I know your Cowboys are playing on the Simpsons cast, and Homer Simpson's out here dropping dimes, and I didn't want to get back to that, but how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. I had a full day today with my son. I was pulling daddy duty, and grandpa was around too, so that was nice. But so I got to do that all day. I recorded a bunch of games to throw up on the Patreon, so we will get to the rest of the conference championship games. But I got week 14 stuff up after having a little bit of a delay on that tape, but had a good, productive day overall.
I love it. I had a very busy day at my day job as well. Again, not full-time yet in this industry. We are getting there. I have some familial compromises that I have agreed to make in the meantime. But honestly, I work at the Y and you can't beat 55% off childcare. So I'm not quitting my job anytime soon. but, you know, I would love to get that place one day. It's coming. But let's dive into this, man. We had a pretty predictable weekend of college football. I think Clemson, SMU, everybody imagined would be close, and nobody was really surprised if Clemson would have pulled that game out, and they did. I think everybody kind of expected Georgia to beat. I think people expected that game to go either way as well, and it was close down to the end. A quarterback mid-off, as it was the first time around. Nobody's shocked about Oregon beating Penn State in that game, and I honestly, watching that game, I really thought, like, man, Penn State left a lot of meat on the bone, and they could have pulled that game out.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
Yeah. But all that to say, no real surprises. But there are some surprises in this bracket. Namely, SMU hangs on and Alabama gets kicked.
I mean, I like the decision. I hate it because I do feel still, I'm going to continue to say it, until I'm blue in the face, I still feel that South Carolina had the best resume to get into the college football playoffs in the SEC. Mm-hmm. With their wins, with their losses, the way that they are playing right now, I really thought that they had the best resume out of the three SEC teams, and I think it just came down to head-to-head wins for the committee. I'm absolutely okay with Alabama not being in this college football playoff. You would have had SMU, first of all, who lost by 3 to BYU early in the year, and that was their only loss, and that was before they made their quarterback change. So a really good football team there in the ACC. I said last week I thought that one ACC team would make it, and I think for SMU, this is really, really good for them and their future. And we've talked about how fun college football could be if SMU is able to kind of build themselves up to an ACC powerhouse. And I wonder if that had anything to do with this, subconsciously even, for the committee.
That's interesting. I want to look up what their stadium capacity is. Like, do they have...
They don't have Alabama.
It's only a 30,000 seater. But again, those stadiums can be renovated. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of lawn seating. So, yeah, I'm wondering if, like, there's the infrastructure to become that again. And I think probably the stadium is the first piece to look at, if that happens, obviously. But nothing would be more thrilling than to see the Bad Boys of SMU come back to life. Maybe a tamed-down version of the Bad Boys of SMU. But, I'm happy to get in. Their quarterback, Kevin Jennings, is a lot of fun to watch. He's an athlete, dude. He can move in the open space, in the open field. So, but as it sits, as everybody predicted, your first round byes are Oregon as the number one seed, Georgia as the number two seed, Boise State as the number three seed, and Arizona State, Kenny Dillingham's Arizona State Sun Devils, are the 4 seed with a first round bye. That's amazing.
Nobody could have guessed that the ACC would not be one of the first 4 in the tournament. It's unbelievable to me. I mean, you're talking about a Mountain West team getting a better seed than one of the P4 conferences.
Then Tennessee, then Ohio State, then Notre Dame. It's amazing. Then Texas.
Yes. And that is one of the flaws with the college football playoff as it is currently constructed. We talked about this weeks and weeks ago when we talked about the best 4 teams should be the top 4 seeds. Mm-hmm. If you want to guarantee a spot in the playoff for the conference champions in the P4, that's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. But it's stupid to have on the left side, number 1 with a dot, and then on the right side, number 1 in a bracket to tell you this is their college football playoff bracket ranking, and this is how good we actually think they are. It's just ridiculous to me.
Yes. Yes, it is. 100% agreed, because at the end of the day, like, there is still a lot of pride in a team like Boise State hosting SMU at home, like hosting a playoff game on the blue turf against SMU. Like, that is still a gorgeous college football atmosphere. Arizona State hosting Clemson now. Like, there is still a lot of pageantry in that in college football. And I don't think you're missing out on anything by ranking the top 4 teams, where if we did that, we would be sitting with Oregon, Georgia, Texas, Penn State. Like, that is how it should be. That is how it should be. You could argue the head-to-head Penn State, Ohio State gets the 4 seed maybe, but I do like them not penalizing the losers of conference championship games.
The other question I had, how did you feel about them ranking SMU ahead of Clemson? I know that they have one less loss, but they just lost a head-to-head. And in my opinion, lost it pretty handily. I know that it ended up being a close game, but that game was not close at all throughout the entire first half. And SMU kind of worked their way back into it. But I think that was more Clemson kind of letting off the gas a little bit as well in that second half. It's weird to me that is how the committee decided to set it up here.
It is bizarre, especially when you look at the quality of wins that SMU has, and they don't really have a quality win on their schedule.
What is it? Like Duke?
Yeah. And they have a loss to BYU, who didn't play in the Big 12 championship game and didn't, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bizarre decision to not flip that, where Clemson gets 11, SMU gets 12.
Well, I know that my Penn State friends are very happy that that's not how it happened.
Yeah, Penn State, your Penn State friends should be very happy with the draw that they just pulled.
Yes,
they waltzed into the semis.
Yeah, we were all in the group chat as it was going down, as they were making the decisions, and everybody was very happy about that. What I will say is how big of an indictment is it if James Franklin's this and loses a home game to SMU? Like, can he continue to get away with this?
I think Penn State's content with it. I know. He brings them their money. He wins 10 games every year. Like, I think they're cool with it. Like, they're going to get money from playing in the college football playoffs. I think they're just cool with it. I think he's a lifer at Penn State, unless he like bottoms out. But again, at least out of high school, he recruits high-end athletes, high-end players.
Yeah.
The portal has been very miss for Penn State thus far. I unless he completely bottoms out, I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. But I also just did think, looking at this, did they really penalize Penn State or Texas too?
Not at all.
No. I mean, they gave him an extra game, but that's saying you didn't win your conference. You need to play an extra game to get back into. And so I kind of like that version of it. But yeah, this is janky to seed it like this, where the top 4 conference champions get the first 4. I also think they could explore, like the NFL does, reseeding the next round.
Yes.
Where the NFL says, if a wild card team wins and the one seed's still in, that wild card team's got to fight the one seed.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't have to be a set in stone bracket. It remains fluid. It becomes a little more complicated because there aren't conferences like there are in the NFL. So like, you could reseed the entire thing instead of like 2 matchups, right? You would have to tinker with the whole thing. But that's the parody of college football. That's what we love about college football, is the parody, is the chaos, is the pageantry. So, like, to me, that's a hell of a lot. That's a hell of a lot of fun to do that. Like, where Penn State's sitting as a sixth seed, SMU beats them, and then SMU has to play Oregon on the other side of the bracket in the next week. Like, that resonates with me a little bit, to reseed it once you get past that first round. And because what isn't fair, and this is why I think that reseeding the next round should be explored. You put Ohio State and Tennessee and Oregon's crosshairs, and they have been the best team in the country the entire season. You gave them the toughest second round match. The number one seed, the toughest second round matchup. Reseed, they're likely playing Notre Dame. Unless an upset happens. Like, yeah, there could be an upset. Then they would get that upset team, and they would deserve an upset team, in my opinion. You're putting them up against Tennessee or Ohio State in the quarterfinals, and that feels like punishment for being the best team in the nation the entire season.
Yeah, it is punishment. And obviously, the committee is that's something that they probably thought about and probably thought, maybe 1% of a college football fan would actually think about that. And so you bringing that up, it's the first time that I've really thought about that, because I'm looking at this and I'm like, well, I think Arizona State's a better football team than I thought that they were. Just
they're a very well-coached football team.
That conference championship game, they were absolutely dominant. I watched every single minute of that game, and they absolutely blew the doors off of them.
Yes.
And so for me, that makes that corner of the bracket really interesting. But I think three of the best six teams in college football are all in that top left bracket.
Yep.
Because at the end of the day, Tennessee might be the best SEC team or the second best SEC team. Mm-hmm. And then Ohio State is, they have the head-to-head against Penn State. They have a terrible loss against Michigan, but I still think they're a better football team than Penn State, because even in that Penn State game, although the score was close, that game was not close. Ohio State was clearly the better football team in that game.
Yeah.
So you're talking about three of the top six teams in the nation all in that top left bracket, and you're right. Oregon would have been better off losing that game to Penn State than winning it.
Because then they dropped what, the five seed? They play Clemson and Arizona State. Like,
yeah.
There's no incentive to be the best team in the nation if this is the current layout.
Yes. If you're gonna put, yeah. No, you're absolutely correct.
No incentive at all.
No.
So that's why I say reseed the second round.
Yeah.
Maybe even the semis. Because if you're reseeding the quarters, you can reseed the semis too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an outlandish idea. Like, literally the National Football League does it. So, like, what's the issue here? So, I think I might be way off base because my NBA knowledge is way out of touch, but I think the NBA does too. I think they reseed second round too.
I don't know, but
fact check me on that, because this is an NFL draft podcast and not an NBA podcast for a reason. Yeah, so that's my biggest takeaway, is like, you punished Oregon for consistently being the best football team in the nation.
Yeah.
Like, that's icky to me. But
it is.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about these games? Do we even need to talk about these games, or should we just pronounce the winner, whoever has more NFL draft prospects?
You know, I'm not, never mind. I'm going to filter myself out there a little bit. Let's talk through them. Yeah. Let's give a little dap on draft prediction here.
We can cut that if you want to.
No, I'm good. I like the, yeah. So I'm cool to talk through. Let's give our dap on draft prediction here. So let's just start at the top, that 9 versus 8 seed, Ohio State, Tennessee. This has potential to be the best game of the first round. I mean, it should. It's the 9 versus 8 seed, right? I, again, am pretty skeptical of the toughness that has been ingrained within the philosophy of Ohio State's program under Ryan Day. But Tennessee, I also do not feel is a team that has an identity of punching the man across from him in the face. I think this is very much going to be a throw the ball around the yard kind of game. The only thing that Ohio State needs to worry about is they just got the shit beat out of them by two NFL draft caliber defensive tackles. And Tennessee has two NFL draft caliber defensive tackles as well. And Omari Thomas and Omar Norman Lott. That should worry them quite a bit coming into this game based on how Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham dismantled their makeshift interior. That's what I'm watching out for. At the end of the day, like I think I love Nico. I love the tools of Nico. He has had an abysmal back half of the season for Tennessee. So we'll see how he can kind of buck up in this game. I don't trust Tennessee's offensive line much at all. But at the end of the day, Ohio State's defensive front, which is loaded, was supposedly supposed to be loaded with top 50 prospects, has underperformed most of the season as well.
I have a tough time with this one because of that defensive line matchup versus offensive line matchup between Tennessee and Ohio State. I think that that defensive front for Tennessee could absolutely wreck this game because you also have James Pierce Jr. on the outside. So dropping back and passing the ball is going to be difficult for a quarterback who really struggled the last time out. So I really think I'm leaning towards Tennessee, even though you're right, Nico, that passing attack has been anemic almost all year. And you talked about the tools for him. He's obviously got high caliber NFL traits, but that passing attack is not there. It's been the Dylan Sampson show from start to finish this year. I do think that that is a decent recipe to muck the game up against Ohio State a little bit. Play some ball control, spread that team out, and then hope for a big play or two, because I know at least one of those Ohio State corners is prone to a double move.
And Tennessee does have speed.
And Tennessee has speed on the outside, which really hurt Ohio State secondary in that Oregon game. So I think I would have to go with Tennessee in this one, honestly.
I think it'll be close. We'll see which version of Will Howard shows up. If it's the safe and dependable, play point guard Will Howard that they got for all but two games, or if it's going to be all but three games. He wasn't great in Penn State game either, but or is it going to be the Oregon kind of boneheaded lack of consciousness, or Michigan just a like he was shook against Michigan. Like, is that who's going to show up? It's going to come down to a lot there. Man, I think I might take Tennessee too here. I think I might take Tennessee too, because again, you look at well, how can Ohio State lean in this game? It would be with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, with that offensive line is just so completely duct taped right now that and we haven't even talked about James Pierce. Like, we did not mention James Pierce one single time while talking about that. And they do not have an offensive tackle who could block James Pierce. Yeah, so I think I'm going to lean Tennessee here. Clemson, Texas. This also has the ability to be a really mucky game because the quarterback play on both sides could be really mucky.
Yeah. No, absolutely right. And I do think Texas is the much better football team here. Shout out to Andrew Mukuba, who we were texting during it. We thought he was going to get popped in that game for targeting. Really glad that they picked that flag up. But we were talking about it. I said it's probably a bad omen, but I was like, he's reminding me of Michigan Dax Hill, where smaller frame dude, like 6'1", 180, flying around the field and trying to take everybody's head off. It was a blast to watch Andrew Mukuba in that game. It's unfortunate that they lost it. But I just do. I do think that they are the better team between them and Clemson.
I do too. Yeah, it just felt like the entire second half of that football game was like, number four in Texas makes the tackle. Number four in Texas makes the tackle. Number four in Texas broke up the play. Like, Mukuba was the entire second half of the game is like, oh, there he is again. There he is again. There he is again. There he is again.
And I was just talking last week about how everybody forgot he existed.
Yes, yes. It was a blast to watch Andrew Mukuba in that second half of that game. I also just think Texas has way too much talent. Kelvin Banks playing or not is a big deal. But also Clemson's pass rushing, like pass rushers outside, their interior is awesome. Like Peter Woods could go first overall next year. Probably not as good. It's a decent. If the tools add up to a second year leap for the quarterback class the way I think they should, it should be a decent quarterback class. I'll say that. A lot of first year starters making first year mistakes that I'm not going to lean too much into until we see it in year two and they're doing the same stuff. But they should be able to manufacture touches in this game. We'll see that because Clemson also has really good corners. They've got really good corner play. And that's the strength is of Texas right now is kind of that speed on the outside. I think they're going to have to, they're going to run the crap out of the football in this game with Wisner and just let him grind it down. Because I think at the end of the day, they can do that. We'll see what their quarterback situation looks like in this game. They're going to stick with Ewers. They have the whole time. I don't have any reason to think they won't.
Yeah. But
Indiana Notre Dame. I think this one's going to be a dog walk.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think Indiana's shown that they just don't have the horses. As fun of a team they are, as well coached as they are, as in unison, in sync as they are in all three phases of the game, they got dog walked by Ohio State because Ohio State just had the horses. I think we're probably looking at a pretty similar outcome here.
Yeah, and Indiana wants to pass the ball, and Notre Dame has the dudes to beat up Rourke in this game and beat up those wide receivers. Yeah. It's I love that. It's my favorite coach defense in college football and to watch really in general outside of maybe Brian Flores, what he's doing right now. But man, I love how intentional they are with everything that they do in the secondary. I don't think that there's going to be much breathing room for that passing attack. That's how Indiana really needs to move the football. And then on the other side of the ball, you're talking about one of the better running quarterbacks in college football and somebody who we might not love as an NFL draft prospect because of his weaknesses, pushing the ball downfield sometimes, or just the sheer unwillingness to push the ball downfield. He's also not somebody who's going to go out there and make a bunch of mistakes and keep Indiana in this football game. So, yeah, you're right. When you have the horses and you avoid mistakes, you should be able to outrun the others. I think they do.
Speaking of horses, SMU Penn State.
Yeah. I was really underwhelmed with SMU and how they came out of the gates against Clemson. I thought that they looked rattled. I thought Jennings looked rattled by that defensive front. So I thought opposite of that. I thought Penn State offense, it was the best by far I've seen it look this year. And they turned around and they handed the ball off and they saw great success against Oregon running the ball even before Jamar Caldwell went down. So I think they're going to lean on that. They're going to lean on some play action. They're going to get the ball in the hands of Tyler Warren. They're going to throw the ball out of the backfield to Nick Singleton. And it's a situation a little bit like Notre Dame, where I just think that Penn State has the horses that the Mustangs do not.
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree. Again, Aller was bad in that Oregon game, and they still found a way to fight and fight and fight. Like he missed throw after throw after throw, like dudes wide open on the hashes, running up the hashes and just missing them, throwing opposite hash, missing them towards the back. Like
the one out route that was completely uncovered. Nobody was anywhere near him. So it wasn't like a throwaway type deal. He missed it by like 6 yards, just a quick speed out to nobody. It was, that was a frustrating game to watch in a Penn State bar, because I'm sitting there and I'm watching it and I'm like, wow, this team, for as good as Oregon was that night, that offense was keeping up. And if they just got out of their own way and didn't make those stupid mistakes early, those stupid penalties, that we're talking about one of the better games that we've seen all year in college football. So that was unfortunate.
Yeah, it was, because I really thought they found something. Like Singleton, man, I think they can shoulder a load with Singleton in the playoffs. And I think Andy Klinicki knows that. Obviously, he knows he has two guys. Like, his offense is two guys.
Yes.
He built the whole plan out against Oregon, and for the most part, they were running wild. There were just times when the quarterback couldn't get them the football. This one shouldn't be much of a game. And then getting into the semis, I don't think it should be much of a game against Boise State either. I just don't.
Yeah.
And I think Penn State should waltz into the semifinals in this bracket. Yeah. I mean, I love Ashton Jeanty. I'm glad we're going to get him against another P4 school, another game against a P4 school. Their entire offense is Ashton Jeanty, and their quarterback is all play action, like, based passing. He's not very good. I don't see how they can score 30 points. They couldn't score 30 points against UNLV. Like, I don't think they can score 30 points.
No, they probably can't. Not against that Penn State defense. Because even the linebacker play at Penn State is quite good. So you're right, man. I again, another team, the Broncos this time, don't have the horses that Penn State does. And that's kind of all it comes down to there. Penn State, despite losing their conference championship game, got the nicest run to the Final Four out of any team in college football.
Yep. They sure did. So then we're talking about Georgia Notre Dame in this Daft on Draft prediction here. This is another game where it's really funny. I said Notre Dame, IU should be a dog walk because they don't have the horses. I also think Georgia Notre Dame should be a dog walk because I don't think Notre Dame has the horses comparatively to Georgia. Like, Notre Dame doesn't have Joe Alt, Blake Fisher playing offensive tackle for them. Benjamin Morrison's out. I mean, Georgia's wide receivers.
I was going to say that doesn't matter all that much because Georgia's
the only thing. So wait, I'm going to walk myself back on this a little bit because.
And is Carson Beck going to play? Georgia can't score.
Georgia's can't score points, and Notre Dame's defense will find the football. Xavier Watts will find the football. Carson Beck will put on the green goblin mask and try to give you the football. The end of that first half where he got hurt, both of those interceptions that called back negated by penalties were atrocious. Atrocious throws. The fumble, atrocious.
That was a ball don't lie moment.
Yes. Like, he is like, yes, Willem Dafoe in Spider-Man, the Green Goblin mask calling out to him is like Carson Beck in turnovers at this point in his college football career. Notre Dame could win this game ugly. Yeah, I'm going to walk myself completely back on this. They could win this game ugly. Can they score points, though? I mean, they're going to have to ride Jeremiah Love. But can you beat up an interior of Georgia to do that? This game could be like 10-13.
Yes, it very well could be. And I kind of hope that it is, because I don't think you're getting a 10-13 game in any of these other matchups.
No. Tennessee, Oregon. We'll see what happens offensively with Tennessee, but again, they've really struggled to throw the football. I think Oregon probably wins that game like 31-17.
Yeah, but what I will say is we did just see Penn State really run it down Oregon's throat.
Yeah.
And that is something that Tennessee could absolutely do.
Yeah, I would say Tennessee and Penn State's offensive lines are pretty comparable too, comparative. No dudes. They're just a collective unit.
Yeah.
It could. But I mean, Nico does have the talent and they do have the speed. I mean, it has the potential to be a good game, but like, nothing about Tennessee's passing attack has come to fruition this year. And that makes me wonder, like, can they go shot for shot with Oregon, who has been a very fluid, very effective, very efficient offense for 15 weeks now? Like, the way that Gabriel just anticipates throws, gets his eyes where they need to be and gets the ball out is, and then when it's not there, like, the dude can scoot.
Yeah.
Like, he can scoot. So I still think Oregon wins this game because I don't know if Tennessee can score. Again, can score 30 points because once they started playing SEC schools, they struggled to score 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I skeeted it or whatever we want to call it. I guess we don't want to call them skeets because of the connotation. But Oregon, I posted it. They just play offense on easy mode. Everything that they do is on easy mode. That offensive line is dominant. The run game is beautiful to watch. And then Dylan Gabriel goes out there and just does whatever he wants. There is a very huge benefit of playing, ask Bo Nix, of playing that many college football games.
Mm-hmm.
You are mentally at your absolute peak. You've seen so much football at that point. And we're seeing that these guys who play for a really long time, Bo Nix of 3 years ago at Auburn is not anywhere close to the iteration of Bo Nix that we saw in his final year at Oregon. Completely different football players. And when you operate at that kind of level and you have the offensive line that can protect you and you have a really good running game as well, it's really hard to stop you when you have a guy who on the outside, nobody can touch. If you don't get your hands on Tez Johnson at the line of scrimmage, he's just going to be open. There's nothing that you can do about it. So that offense is awesome to watch, man. And
the dude looks like a stick bug on the field. But yes, he does. And he is unbelievably hard to get your hands on in the open field. Like the way he was unbelievably slippery in that game against Penn State, they could not get their hands on that dude.
Nope. I think he had close to 200 yards by the end of it. So. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that they end up with the win, but I do think that Tennessee could give them a pretty good game.
Yeah. Texas, Arizona State. I think this is where Texas or Arizona State's fun run ends. They're a really well-coached team, man. I really like Kenny Dillingham, what he's doing there. Depending on what happens with Ohio State in the first round here and their head coaching future, I would love for them to write him a blank check. But Arizona State is his alma mater. He is from Arizona. His family all lives there. I don't know if he'd be willing to leave. He might be home. Sam Levitt deserves a lot of credit because I think he's got a really nice arm, and that dude can freaking move as well for Arizona State. But again, we're talking about two potential first-round offensive tackles, a potential first-round wide receiver. That defense is Isaiah Bond. Yeah, there's a lot to consider with that. But and then defensively, like Makuba back there, like Jadae Barron back there. Is Jalen Tyson going to play? They just dog walked Iowa State without their best player. So, but is Jalen Tyson going to play as well? Like that's something to consider for Arizona State. But I just think Texas, their entire playoff national championship future hinges on Quinn Ewers. And can you just scheme the ball out of his hands? Like, that's literally it. And for the most part, they've been able to. A lot of RPOs, a lot of play action, Gunnar Helm just ripping up the seam, finding space. They've been able to a lot. But in situations where they haven't, it has been very ugly, including last week. And watching that dude try to throw opposite hash is painful.
So hard to watch.
Oh, my gosh, it's painful.
At this point.
It just flutters, man. Like, his arm talent is zapped. I don't know. I mean, he's had multiple shoulder injuries. I think he had a core injury as well. Like, all of the things that you need to throw a football, he's gotten beat up throughout his career. Three straight seasons with injuries. I just think his body's tapped out. That's Quinn Ewers, and so it's very ugly to watch him throw a ball to the opposite hash. So again, I've had the take that if they play Arch, they're winning the national championship. We'll see if they play Arch. They have so much evidence that they probably need to rip the cord on Ewers, but they just haven't. But I do think they can beat Arizona State.
Yeah, so do I. What I will say is that Georgia game, I thought that they had the advantage until mobile quarterback comes in against them.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgia found a way to run the ball. And what we saw from Arizona State last week, they don't have the dudes up front.
Mm-hmm.
And Texas has a really good run defending defensive tackle. But Arizona
gotta State do a little 4 yards. they'll four. It's got to be 4 yards in a cloud of dust, to you man. Like, yeah, they'll take second and six, third and twos all day long.
Yep, and then he'll break four tackles on his way to a 47-yarder.
Yeah, it's so funny to watch him run in the open field, dude, because he has no juice whatsoever, but he doesn't care. Like, bodies come out, just throw him off and keep moving. Yep, so funny.
And he's fun. He's fun too, man, because although he has no long juice whatsoever, man, some of his cuts behind the line of scrimmage to create width, to get outside, like, it is amazing how often he is able to win angles just because he's really smooth for a big guy. Mm-hmm. No juice, but I really like his feet. And then he obviously can break the hell out of some tackles.
That, my friends, is a late round committee running back.
Yes.
If I've ever heard of one. So that puts us with Georgia, Penn State, Oregon, Texas in the semis in our prediction here. I think Penn State can beat Georgia. I think Penn State can beat Georgia. I don't know if I'm willing to bank on that on this podcast that Penn State in this prediction. Penn State can score points. And it's weird to ask the question, can Georgia go shot for shot with us with another team? But if Penn State can score 28, can Georgia?
That's I think they could because of their run game. Because I saw Oregon's offensive line kind of bully the Penn State defensive line in that game. Oregon ran the ball really well for the most part. So I would say Georgia has the dogs. They have
the worst set of dogs offensively, though, that they've had a very long time, including an offensive tackle, including against Abdul Carter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, those offensive tackles are putrid, dude.
Yeah. And still, at the end of the day, nobody can cover Tyler Warren. And if here's the thing is, if they really do lean heavily on Nick Singleton and give Katron a third of the snaps instead of half of the snaps, I think that that offense could really be dangerous because Singleton is so explosive. He's so violent. Mm-hmm. And then if you can focus on getting the ball to Tyler Warren in creative ways. Yeah.
My concern as well, though, would be anytime that Drew Aller has faced a defensive coordinator who knows how to install rotations, who knows how to install post-snap dropouts, he looks a bit lost. Last week is a great example about that. I mean, there were some really easy throws that he's just, his feet are in frantic and he's not setting his feet and he's missing bad. And Georgia will do that. And they have dogs up front and Penn State does not up front offensive along their offensive line. So that would be my concern. It's like, is Aller going to look completely shell-shocked in this game? And that could be a case here for sure.
Yeah,
I would probably still say Georgia, but I do think this game has potential to get wacky and to get nuts. And it feels weird to talk about James. We're talking about James Franklin too. It feels weird to talk about James Franklin potentially coaching a national championship, but I do think that game could get wacky.
Yeah, that's because it is weird. Georgia's winning this game. All that time we were talking about that game, I didn't even think about the fact that James Franklin is the coach. I'm taking Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, and then Oregon, Texas.
I don't think the Texas can keep it. It's so weird. Oh, my God. Think about the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. Think about how you and I talked about that Texas offense and how far that they have fallen. Because now it's like,
we were talking about Isaiah Bond potentially winning the Biletnikoff. Like, we said, this guy has the scheme. This guy should have the quarterback. This guy should have every opportunity to win the Biletnikoff. And they won't throw the freaking football.
Yeah.
Multitude of reasons there. Quarterback one. But he's not blameless in any of this.
No.
But outside of defensive tackle and the trenches, offensive trenches are the strength of Texas. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody on the back end for Oregon that can, I mean, people like Jabbar Muhammad, but that's a day three, just a guy to me, like a rotational day three player. Like, I don't think they have a guy. And Matthew Golden was really good against Georgia.
Yeah.
Who's the other kid? Wingo. Ryan Wingo is lethally explosive. Isaiah Bond, if he's on, like, I don't know if Oregon has the back end talent or the second level. Like, people like the Oregon linebacker, the white kid with the cowboy collar. I can't think of his name. But
I can't think of his name. Yeah, either.
people like him, but I think both those linebackers are pretty average football players as well. The other linebacker, Bossa, was a first team off the bus guy. 100% looks the part.
Mm-hmm.
Dude cannot play football. So that makes me question, like, yes, Derek Harmon, Jamari Caldwell, good, really good football players. Texas's strength is the offensive trenches, man. Like that unit has been so good outside of the Georgia game, the first Georgia game all year long. They've been so good. Cam Williams, Kelvin Banks, Jake Majors, those guys have been so good. I wonder if you protect even Ewers, like if you protect Ewers, do they have the guys that can hang on the back end? And
absolutely. I mean, this is a team we were talking about being the best in the nation earlier this year.
Yeah.
We thought that they had the talent, and it all comes down to quarterback play.
Mm-hmm. That's literally the only question mark on Texas's football team. Yeah. They are so rock solid elsewhere.
Yeah. Everywhere. Everywhere.
That is a very good roster.
Yep. And then at the end of the day, on the other side, I just keep going back to Oregon plays offense on easy mode. Mm-hmm. Everything.
They do.
It's so good. And I love Texas's defense. Texas's defense is also a very heavy middle field closed cover three match team. And Oregon's offense with that speed, with their crossing route ability.
They love their three beaters.
Is going to absolutely dismantle their cover three. So Oregon's winning that football game.
So that leads us to a little Dan Lanning revenge game on Kirby Smart. He had to take Kirby Smart shit for however long he coached Georgia. And now it's a little Dan Lanning revenge game here. Can he get the best of his of Mr. Miyagi here? Georgia, Oregon. Again, if this is the matchup, I don't think Georgia goes shot for shot with Oregon. And again, the strength of Oregon or Georgia's team that we have talked about over and over and over again, and the reason they keep winning games are the edge rushers. Jaylen Walker, Mykael Williams. Well, guess what? Oregon's offensive tackles are playing pretty good football right now, and they're both going to get drafted. One of them, either this year or next, Connor Lee could go back. We've had our ups and downs with Connor Lee, but if he declares this year, he's going to go top 50. The traits are there. And he has put together some pretty good tape. Like, Oregon has two offensive tackles, NFL offensive tackles. Again, Ajani Cornelius, just a guy. But just a guy at the college level is a good college football player. Like, you don't get drafted unless you're a good college football player. So, I don't think Georgia can go shot for shot with Oregon.
Neither do I. And I'm really happy for Dan Lanning because he's somebody who I've really become a fan of in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
In that organization. And I'm very just thinking about this as well. Something that I didn't bring up that we should have is SMU lost, but we almost had all four conference champions be transplants from a year ago because Texas was in the Big 12. Arizona State won. Arizona State is
a Pac-12
team. SMU, if they would have won the ACC, mm-hmm. Texas, and then Oregon did win. So it's
that would have been amazing.
It would have been really cool to see. And it's just really cool to see these teams. And we talked about this a lot as well as the East Coast, West Coast travel stuff. Mm-hmm. And Oregon doesn't really have to go all the way to the East Coast very often, but they stood every test every single time they did have to go over there. And against Ohio State, had a really nice game and kind of showing what they could be. And since then, have been the best team in college football. And I think that they are a well-deserved champion this season because, to me, they're the only truly elite team in college football.
They proved it. And you might have just said this, I did space for a second there, but speaking of the East-West travel, I mean, Oregon had to go to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
They did it in the Big Ten championship game, and they did it, and they won. So they're battle tested, dude. That they got to get through the second round. Honestly, the quarterfinals is their toughest matchup until the national championship. Will be their toughest matchup until the national championship. Again, absolute wacky format. That's got to change. It has to change. They have to look at this and be like, we can't do this again next year. I hope they do that. I hope they look at this and say, we can't run this system back next year. Again, I thought eight teams was the right number to begin with, because there's no controversy if we're seeding eight teams right now. Like, the eight teams would be logical picks. Indiana, people would throw a fit about Indiana getting in. Outside of that, like, yes, these eight teams make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
When you expand it to 12, it gets way too complicated. There aren't 12 national championship caliber teams in the nation. People are throwing a fit about Boise State not getting in as a nine seed as well, and not a P4 conference champion. People are throwing a fit about Boise State and Indiana. But outside of that, like, I thought eight teams was the right number. They have to change it. But our draft prediction is that Oregon will win the national championship. And I think that's all we got, man. Do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
That's good. We went way over our normal allotment on this episode. So I hope you enjoyed some not NFL draft talk, but some college football playoff talk. Until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft Podcast.